Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. With the U.S. waging war in Iran, which is sending stocks skittering and gas prices spiking, costs are on just about everybody's mind. So, let's kick things off with Mark Cox on the state of the economy.
Dom Savino in with us this morning. Hey, what's going on in business?
Investors, no surprise, are continuing to monitor the latest developments from the war with Iran. President Trump is trying to pressure other countries to help reopen the vital Strait of Hormuz, where an Iranian blockade has stopped the flow of oil tankers. And even though oil prices are lower for the moment, I do come bearing bad news for the gas pump. According to AAA, the average price of a gallon bumped up again today. President Trump is supposed to visit Beijing later this month, but China is on that list of countries he's pushing to pitch in at the Strait of Hormuz, and so he may postpone that trip if China does not lend a hand. As Americans navigate the rising costs of living, even the dollar store is hurting. Dollar Tree is out with a new sales forecast for the year, and it's largely below expectations. The discount chain follows rival Dollar General, which also signaled weaker demand last week as bargain-hunting shoppers get more selective.
And no one feels more pain at the pump than drivers in California. Here's Phil Mateer.
Governor Newsom says California's high gas prices are because of the war in Iran. And he's pointing a finger straight at President Trump. Joining us live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline, our KCBS insider Phil Mateer. Phil, good morning. Is that really fair to say that California's high gas prices are the war's fault?
Well, the war has contributed to the overall price of international oil going up. And of course, that affects California prices because when other prices go up, it goes up as well. What is not fair is the extra dollar to dollar 20 that Californians pay per gallon compared to the rest of the country. And anybody who's crossed over from Arizona, Oregon, or Nevada into the state of California after being away for a while is immediately hit with pump shock. I mean, it's pretty exaggerated. But, you know, he is pointing at Trump. He's done it before when some of his housing initiatives for the mentally ill started slipping and weren't being going online. He said it was Trump's tariffs that were to blame. So you really can't go wrong in California by pointing the finger at Trump, even if it's your middle index finger.
But isn't this actually an easy one for the president to refute, to point whichever finger right back at Gavin Newsom and say, hey, pal, before the war, California already had the highest gas prices in the country.
And that's exactly what the Trump administration is doing and saying that California's anti-drilling policies in the past, it's difficult to work and repair refineries and no new refineries coming into the state. It's special blend. You put those all together and you have a recipe for higher prices. And that's just what we've been getting. And they could get worse. Two refineries in the state, Phillips 66 down in the southern part of the California and the Valero plant in Benicia are going to be idled because the companies behind them say we're just not making enough money. It's not we can't maintain them. There's too many restrictions. So we're just going to put them on hold. They're not going to completely shut them down. And that has the Newsom administration, believe it or not, scrambling, you know, to try to find some companies to take them over. Because as it stands, we're going to be importing more gasoline than we export. That's a flip from a couple of years ago. You know, what can California Newsom do about this? He's basically behind the scenes trying to put even more controls that were being imposed on the oil companies on hold. He's saying, look, some of those ideas about, you know, penalizing them supposedly for price gouging, if we could ever prove it, and putting limits on the profits, we're not going to be doing any of that stuff. That's going on behind the scenes, even though it had the backing of the state legislature. But publicly, when in doubt, point to Trump. It's a short-term solution, but then he's betting that people's memories are going to be short, at least in the rest of the country, on this issue. In California, it's going to be a different story because it doesn't show any signs of getting better anytime soon.
With all this in mind, Chad Hartman asks, is the American dream still attainable?
It is, Dave, but isn't it crystal clear it's harder now than it's been in many aspects of our life? Are we being myopic right now and we're not I don't want to say giving credit, but we're not acknowledging all the challenges in the 90s or the 60s or the 40s or the 30s, and we're just fixating on what is happening right now.
No, I don't think we are at all. I think it's definitely harder. Of course, it is attainable. It's not impossible, but we know what costs are and we know what income is, and, you know, whether it's housing costs, whether it's cost of a vehicle, whether it's, you know, insurance, all the things that make the American dream, you know, getting that house, the white picket fence, the wife and two kids, blah, blah, blah.
That's it.
It's exponentially harder than it was, 15, 20 years ago even.
Well, as this story points out, again, low higher job market, prices that keep going up. Obviously, we had huge inflation during the Biden administration. You have the competition from AI.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
70% of young Americans said home ownership is an important aspect of the dream, compared to 54% of the general population. Man, I would have thought, Dave, that'd be higher.
I agree. Surprising number.
And by the way, home ownership can be a condo, right? But something within the pursuit of your life, college or not college, maybe the first job is gold. For most of it, it's not. You work your way up. I mean, that's a part of the dream for a lot of people, I believe. You know, and those numbers really, to me, surprise me. More numbers. 53% of Americans still believe the dream was possible. That was in 24. 41%. The dream was once attainable, but isn't anymore. And 6% said it was never possible. That's sad. And it's out there for some, at least in their perception. And some of their challenges are incredibly difficult. Dave, obviously from 24, we have a new president. We have new challenges. We have areas where people think that the president has had a great deal of success, and others are great detractor. If we took that poll right now of America, and again, 53% said the dream still possible, 41% the dream once attainable. Where do you think it'd be now?
I think pessimism reigns right now, right?
Yep.
I believe so. Yeah, then the numbers would have to be down, and it's so many more reasons just than costs and all the things. You know, how society has changed. Our social society has changed. Where, you know, people aren't getting married. People aren't getting married as young, you know, waiting on kids, all those things, you know, moving back in with the parents after college, for instance. A lot of people are doing that, and it's kind of okay. Some out of necessity, some just to say, you know, I'm going to save money. So, yeah, I think that for some people, the dream is probably unattainable. For most, it probably still is, but that's going to mean good amount of waiting versus what it used to be.
It's still attainable. It's harder. That's my view. And again, we have this enormous wealth gap in our country. And I'm not the person to rain on the parade of successful individuals and think everybody has to be taxed higher and higher and higher, and that is our solution. But let's just be honest. Since COVID happened, if you had wealth available to you, you clearly took a stock market hit in a large way. But if you stayed the course, you're in way better position now. Whereas others who are not in that position, and it's tough to generalize, but in this case we will, and I certainly know there are exceptions. But if you were not in that position, there are tens of millions of people who felt like in 2019 they were closer to where they wanted to be, the so-called American dream, than they are now. And that's a sad statement. That's a way it should lead us to more conversations on how can we get more people in that lane where it is more achievable.
My opinion is that the American dream is still attainable, but I think it requires more planning than it used to. I think it begins with parents, how they decide to help their children with their education, even when they're very young, in elementary school and middle school, getting them on the right track. And I think that funny that you come up with this topic, because this morning I was going through some files. I came across a pay stub of mine from 1987, and it was for the income for the year was $36,000. And I just did some quick math at $15 an hour. If you worked an entire year, 52 weeks out of the year for 40 hours, you'd earn $31,000 less.
Right.
And I didn't have a college degree in 1987. I didn't have a great job, but I had a union factory job, which there was an abundance of those at that time because there was so much manufacturing going on in America that if you were a warm body, you could get a job in a factory that paid, you know, above average wages. And if you had a spouse and they also could get such a job, you could get a cabin or put your kids through school. It's harder to do that now. But again, my opinion, you have to get, as a parent, you'd better get your kids on a track early to get a good education, get involved in a good trade. But you just can't wait late to decide you want to be a success. You better get on that track early.
Todd, interesting phone call. Thank you so much. Dave, I think a lot of people agree with that. And I'll say again what I say a lot. There are amazing parents all across the globe, and sometimes they turn out amazing children. Sometimes parents are incompetent and their kids struggle. Sometimes parents are incompetent and their kids are great. And vice versa. But just piggybacking on what Todd said before I get to a lot of texts, if, let's say when you're now out in the workforce, whether that's right away after high school, trade school, college, whatever it might be, and you don't find your path, I think it's harder now, Dave, if you're still searching 25, 30, 35, whatever it might be, to find that path and get to it later than it was decades ago. What do you think about that?
I think there might be something to that. And there's also the problem of, okay, if you know exactly what your path is, if you, you know, maybe you know in high school what you want to do and it has to involve going to college for whatever degree program you want, for whatever job you want, a college degree is required. We know what college costs are now. We know
obscene.
We know the burden. I mean, you know, I went to a, you know, the U of M. It was 3.5 years because I'm brilliant. I did 4 years and 3.5. No, I was lucky with some high school credit that carried over, which was great. But, you know, it wasn't that expensive. I think I came out with $15,000 to $20,000 in debt, having paid some as we went, grants and things like that. But, you know, I look at my wife. She did a 4-year degree program, 3 years in grad school to become a doctor of physical therapy. You know, it was $100,000 at that point. I don't even want to know what that would be today. You know, we're still paying it off, but it was, you know, manageable over many, many, many years. We're working on almost 20 years now. We're still going at it, but it's almost gone. Those costs, you know, were not small then, and they've just ballooned massively.
That is a huge burden, again, for tens of millions of people in this country. More text here. It is, but you need two people to have good paying jobs and don't impulse buy. A lot more pressure, Dave, to have two people working than it was years ago.
You don't need two working parents, good incomes. If you have one on a very, you know, good income, you can make it work. But I think we also have to acknowledge that probably in large part due to the rise of social media, the American dream has changed to include not just the house and the fence and the kids and the dog, but also a nice vacation. You know, get the photos from Disney World, and we're going to hit Hawaii.
Look in the part.
Yes, we're going to do a spring break every single year. It's kind of become part of the American dream, and shame on us for allowing it to be.
Excellent point. Yes, it is attainable. Not every house has to be 2,500 square feet. Not every car has to be new. Your kid does not need to be on the traveling team. 50% of consumer spending is now done by 10% of the earners, and that percentage is growing. The dream is the least attainable it's been since the original robbery barons. That's the issue. I mean, again, like you have now a millionaire's tax in Washington. You have a billionaire's debate tax in California. The debate is whether, I don't even think it's on the ballot yet. And even Gavin Newsom, well, a lot of people think it's the lefty's lefty, Dave. He's against it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do if you're a state where you look at some of the money at the high end and you absolutely want to applaud the creativity and the entrepreneurial spirit, but for a lot of people who are busting their ass every damn day and they see that money that they think it's obscene, and how can I have the opportunity most have to just be realistic, not to get to the billions of dollars, but let me get to a point where I can have that house, I can have the job that's right, we can take a trip or two, the kids can feel good. And it's hard to not be furious if you're in that position and think, no matter what I do, I can't get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it wasn't, I don't know how long ago it happened, but corporate America and perhaps our own government realized that, you know, the middle class, they sure do have a lot of money. You add them all up, they sure got a lot of money. And, you know, costs for so much has risen, whether it's kid-related, whether it's home-related, whatever it is. They're finding their ways to get hands in our pockets. Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Berry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Sarah Austin Jeunesse, The Moth's executive producer and longtime host of The Moth Podcast. Every week, we share true stories told live and without notes by real people from all walks of life. Stories about disastrous haircuts, May-December romances, photographing Pluto, fighting for justice, and so much more. Some stories make you laugh, some make you think, and many stay with you long after they're told. Discover the power of story. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.